So let's say this happens. We actually do send people to Mars. There's no guarantee that the mission would be successful. It could be a disaster.
At around 4:30 a.m., our satellites detected a storm approaching the Ares 3 mission site on Mars. The storm had escalated to severe, and we had no choice but to abort the mission. But during the evacuation, astronaut Mark Watney was killed.
That's a scene from the new blockbuster movie The Martian, starring Matt Damon.
This is Mark Watney. And I'm still alive, obviously.
The Martian is based on the best-selling novel by Andy Weir. It's the story of the very resourceful astronaut Mark Watney, whose struggle to survive on Mars hinges on his science and math skills, and also a whole lot of duct tape. Steve Paulson recently caught up with Weir to talk about the story behind the breakout novel and to hear Weir as astronaut Mark Watney.
So here's the situation. I'm stranded on Mars. I have no way to communicate with Hermes or Earth. Everyone thinks I'm dead. I'm in a hab designed to last 31 days. If the oxygenator breaks down, I'll suffocate. If the water reclaimer breaks down, I'll die of thirst. If the hab breaches, I'll just kind of explode. If none of those things happen, I'll eventually run out of food and starve to death. So yeah, I'm screwed.
Yeah, that is a great setup to the situation.
Thanks.
How did you come up with the idea for writing this story about an astronaut who's stranded on Mars and has to figure out how to survive?
Well, I'm a space dork. I'm a big fan of manned and unmanned spaceflight. And I was sitting around at home imagining how could we do a manned Mars mission? Not for the purposes of telling a story, but just how could we do it? Just a thought experiment. And so I figured out, okay, here's how we get them there. Here's how we get them back. Here's how long they can stay. Then I started thinking, okay, we need to deal with, things that can go wrong. What if this breaks? What if that breaks? What if these two things break at the same time? How do we make sure that the crew doesn't die? And as I started to think about these scenarios, I started to realize, hey, this could make a good story. So I made an unfortunate protagonist and subjected him to all of them.
This wasn't your job. This was just kind of what you do in your spare time, imagining disaster scenarios on Mars.
So at the time I wrote The Martian, I was a full-time computer programmer. I programmed computers for 25 years. I only quit last year because I was now able to make a living off of writing.
The thing that's remarkable about your story is it is full of science and math and engineering. I mean, your character, Mark Watney, who gets stranded on Mars, he's kind of like a MacGyver in a spacesuit.
Yep, pretty much. That's what I was going for.
You just sort of learned all this on your own then.
Tons and tons of research. I started with more than a layman's knowledge because it's been a hobby and a passion of mine my whole life, but I'm by no means an expert. I'm just an enthusiast.
So how would you describe your hero, Mark Watney?
He is obviously very intelligent, very resourceful, and he's got sort of a gallows humor going on all the time. He's a pretty funny guy. No matter how dire the situation gets, he just kind of like handles it and deals with it in an optimistic way.
So what is he up against? I mean, what are his biggest obstacles, his biggest challenges to be able to survive?
Well, Mars is very, very inhospitable. First off, there is practically no atmosphere, and what atmosphere there is almost entirely carbon dioxide. So it's roughly the same as being out in space. You have to have an EVA suit, a space suit on anytime you're outside of your little base. The next problem is he's got equipment and supplies designed to last 31 days, and he's got to survive for a very long time. He figures out it'll be 4 years until the next manned Mars mission arrives, and if nothing else, he needs to survive for 4 years on 31 days' worth of supplies.
So how does he manage to do that?
Well, fortunately, our hero is a botanist, and he had some viable potatoes, some potatoes that could still be planted. And then so he just starts growing potatoes inside of his habitat.
Well, in fact, you go into some detail about how this is actually possible to basically start farming on Mars, but could you give us a taste of that from your book?
Sure. Log entry, Sol 25. Remember those old math questions you had in algebra class, where the water's entering a container at a certain rate and leaving at a different rate, and you need to figure out when it'll be empty? Well, that concept is critical to the Mark Watney Doesn't Die project I'm working on. I have plenty of multivitamins, over double what I need. And there's 5 times the minimum protein in each food pack, so careful rationing of portions takes care of my protein needs for at least 4 years. My general nutrition is taken care of. I just need calories. I need 1,500 calories every day. I have 400 days of food to start off with, so how many calories do I need to generate per day along the entire time period to stay alive for around 1,425 days? I'll spare you the math. The answer is about 1,100.
That's great. Gives you some sense of what he's up against. Now, I've read somewhere that that you've described the story of survival as basically an extended math problem.
That's fair.
Now, there's some other things that he needs. Oxygen. I mean, how does he get enough oxygen?
Well, fortunately, the HAB is equipped with an oxygenator. This is real technology, where it's just a device that uses energy to strip the carbon off of CO2 molecules. So the carbon dioxide that you exhale, the oxygenator pulls the carbon off and releases the oxygen.
And what about water? How does he get the water that he needs?
So the water that he needs for his own survival isn't a problem because the water system is also self-contained in recycling. So he urinates, and also, most people don't know this, you lose about as much water from your breath as you do from going to the bathroom. So if you ever notice, if you breathe on a mirror or something, you'll fog it up. Well, that's water vapor exiting through your lungs. The HAB has recycling. It has water purification systems, and there's really no way for the water to get out of the system because it's an airtight container. So he doesn't have any initial problems with water. However, to grow potatoes, he needs a lot more water than he started with. So he has to get kind of inventive on how to create more water.
And how does he do that?
Well, it's a complicated system, so he has to make it. And water's recipe is you take hydrogen and oxygen and burn them, and then the result is water.
So you have all the science in there, and as you've said, you did a ton of research to try to get it right. How important was that to you to get the science right?
Well, it was really important to me. See, I'm a science geek, and so it's painful for me when I'm watching science fiction and I see something that just breaks the rules. Now, what's weird is there's sort of what I call the uncanny valley of scientific accuracy. If you go way overboard and make stuff up that's just completely off the rails, then everyone will accept it. So you say, like, yeah, I've got a warp drive. It makes my ship go faster than light. Everyone's like, okay, no problem. But if you say, like, oh, I'm going to walk around on the moon without a spacesuit on just by holding my breath, everyone's like, no, you'll die. So it's kind of interesting that there's this region where you're kind of accurate, but not accurate enough, where you will really alienate the audience. And I was writing it for a small group of readers at the time when I was posting it to my website.
We should point this out. I mean, this was not originally published as a book. You were just publishing chapters on your own website, right? I mean, self-published.
Right. Initially, it was just a labor of love, and I was posting one chapter at a time to my website. And I'd post a new chapter every 6 or 8 weeks, and I'd get feedback from the readers. And it was cool. My readers are scientifically minded dorks like me, so they would point out any scientific errors in there. That was a great way to try to keep things accurate. No magical tech is allowed. If you start hand-waving on the physics and science in a story like this, then all the challenges go away. If you just say, oh, he uses his chemistry skills to make a thing that generates water or something like that, then all the drama goes away. But if you're accurate, if you actually show the math and show all your work, then it kind of illustrates how incredibly difficult this stuff is.
Yeah. And just to pick up the story of the publishing, I mean, this is kind of an astonishing story in itself. So you were just posting these chapters that you would write on your own website. And then my understanding is that there was enough demand that people wanted to be able to download this more. And so then you self-published on Amazon?
Yeah.
And then somehow you got a contract from a major book publisher.
Yeah. So an editor at Crown Publishing, a division of Random House, heard about it and wasn't sure whether or not to read it. And so he talked to a colleague of his who is a literary agent, said, like, I don't know if I should read this or what. And so the agent, David Fugate, said, well, I'll read it and I'll let you know. And then so David read it and he liked it. And then he said, like, hey, you need an agent? Earlier in life, I'd spent 3 years trying to get a literary agent. And I couldn't get any interest. And then one comes knocking on my door. And then he's like, hey, you need an agent? And I'm like, sure. And so then David turned around to Julian and said, hey, Julian, how much are you going to pay us for this book?
What I heard was that in the same week, you got both a book contract and a movie contract.
Yeah, Fox came for the movie rights around the same time we were negotiating the book contract. And the two things were being negotiated at the same time. And we had verbal agreements on them 4 days apart.
Astonishing
story. It was a stressful
story.
Week. Yeah, it's awesome. It's like you daydream and fantasize about this stuff when you're writing, but you never think it's actually going to happen.
Do you mind my asking what those contracts were worth?
A little bit. Six figures for the book contract, and higher six figures for the film contract.
So just an amazing story. I mean, from self-publishing on your website to a big Hollywood movie.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So what do scientists at NASA think of your book?
Oh, they love it. They love it. They rarely see a book that puts that much effort into scientific accuracy. So they completely forgive me for the areas where I'm wrong. Also, I'm sure that NASA as an entity likes the fact that, you know, they're portrayed in an extremely positive light. And they feel that it might reinvigorate interest in the space program.
Now, suppose there was a mission to Mars and you were offered a seat on that spacecraft. Would you go?
No, I would politely decline. I write about brave people. I'm not one of them. I don't have the right stuff.
I've heard that you are actually afraid of flying. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. And I'm getting better at it. I hadn't flown since 2007, but then NASA offered to give me several days of VIP tours at Johnson Space Center in Houston, and I live in Northern California. So pretty much the only way to get there is to fly. So I sucked it up and I flew.
Kind of ironic, isn't it?
Yeah,
about
it is.
Space flight to Mars, and you don't even like getting on an airplane.
Yeah, like I said, I'm a guy who sits around and imagines cool stuff. I don't actually do the cool stuff.
Andy Weir wrote The Martian, the best-selling book, and now major motion picture. He talked with Steve Paulson.